This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored in part by TradeStation.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Emerging markets are plowed. Biggest week for earnings that we've seen so far this season. Bernanke's last hurrah, and our special guest John Markman is with us today. All this and much more on episode number 349 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, good afternoon, good evening. How are you? Andrew Horowitz here, and we're broadcasting from usually sunny but rather overcast Florida. We have probably the remnants of that ridiculous polar vortex that everybody's talking about. This incredibly scary type of storm that broke off from the Arctic and came down and gave a chill to everywhere, and hopefully you're staying warm. But, you know, I don't know about you, but the word vortex starts making me think that there's something coming that's going to extract and suck up everything in its way. Kind of pretty ugly name to it. Kind of like what we saw with the markets last week when, you know, we saw that there was some trouble in Turkey. You know, the emerging markets really have been having a very tough time. If you've only been looking at the markets here in the U.S., you really didn't notice a lot of things that seemed out of the ordinary. But if you started to take a look at some of the other things out there, it's pretty surprising how badly things are going since the Fed started their tapering back in the latter part of 2013. In fact, some of the things that we've seen have been incredible outflows from the emerging markets that have caused their currencies to really plummet. The markets in those areas really become problematic because what basically was the trade was essentially a carry trade where you look for the highest level of interest in another area and offset it by selling some assets in one that has a low area of interest. So you take the U.S. dollar, maybe you would sell that possibly, and you buy the lira and you buy the bonds and maybe buy the equities of Turkey, and you had a great possible return because you had low volatility. On top of low volatility, you had a decent amount of interest that you would get as the differential by investing in Turkey, etc. Now, when that starts to change, problems occur. Because Turkey was a great place to invest. It had a booming economy. It had a central bank that was very, very cooperative. It had a government that was very much pro-business. And it had a very young overall population that was really becoming and growing into the middle class, and really an entire boom that was occurring. Now, a lot of that was on the heels of exceptional amounts of federal stimulus that we did here. You know, the Fed put in $85 billion a month. And as we know, that finds its way into all sorts of places, not only domestically, but around the world. So what we saw was that this money obviously ended up in Turkey. Not all of it, but some of it. But enough to really push their markets higher and to do a lot for their overall economy. Now, as the decision was made to start tapering, and we saw the first $10 billion, and then we saw another $10 billion that was being tapered on a monthly basis that was agreed to and announced this week. So now from $85 billion, we have $65 billion of monthly purchases of bonds, whether they're going to be treasury or mortgage-backed securities. The fact is that that is money that is coming out of the market, or you can look at it at a different way, just saying that there's a lot less, or at least some less overall amount of liquidity. Now, let me kind of share this with you because I think this is important to take a look at. If you look at the ETFs, now when you look at ETFs versus a market itself, an ETF that is bought in dollars will have a currency that is translated inside the return. Because you get, of course, the return of the markets, the plus or minus, plus you get the currency conversion from going from dollar to the currency that is out there. So let's take a look at this, and I think you'll be pretty surprised. When you look at the emerging markets, right now, for the last 3 months, Turkey is down 29%, their equity markets and the lira when you put that together. When you look at, for example, Hong Kong down 13%, Brazil down 22%, Philippines down 11%, South Africa down 12.5%, Russia down 13%. This is all in the last 3 months. Now, on a year-to-date basis, which we're only talking about really 1 month, right? You know, we're seeing things again, same. We're seeing that Brazil is down 11%, and we're seeing that Russia is down 12%. The better ones, for example, are maybe Canada down 4%, Australia down 5%, Japan down 6%. The best one probably can be Spain, I guess. It's down 1.5%. But overall, it's still a major problem because when we saw that the lira in Turkey started to sell off to a point last week that it was an all-time low against the dollar. And what happened? Because there was so much money leaving Turkey in the form of currency, in the form of market, and in the form of bonds that were just being sold, the Turkish government had to do something because it was really getting out of hand. And what they did was an emergency meeting at midnight in the mid part of last week where they took their interest rates, the core interest rates, from 7% to 12%. That's a big jump. 7% to 12%. Can you imagine that happening here? We'd all have coronaries. Now, that the effect of that is supposed to stabilize the currency and actually bring the currency up because a lot more people would want to be invested in the area that has such a great paying interest rate. So now the alternative from a low-paying bond, let's say here, or a short-term note, or even a currency swap in the form of a carry trade, is much better to have U.S. dollar short and have Turkish lira on the long side. And that did help. In fact, once that announcement came out, which was midnight in time in Turkey and about 5 p.m. here in the U.S., we saw the futures skyrocket up about 10 points on the S&P and about 25 on the NASDAQ and probably close to about 75 or 80 on the Dow Jones in the after hours. By the time the morning came along and the quick effect of the interest rate rise was settled in a bit, we saw that the futures decayed considerably and the lira continued its way down. That was really problematic. Because if a 12% interest rate immediate hike overnight can't, and a surprise hike for that matter, can't stabilize that currency, we have some problems here. And we're finding that this is becoming more and more of a problem. And because of the additional $10 billion of cut that was done to the, or tapering that was done this week, caused even a greater problem. Markets have been very much concerned about this. Now you may be thinking, okay, let me get this straight. In Turkey, there was all this money that was flowing into the market, whatever the amount, and it really helped out their market. Great. What does that have to do with things here? I mean, how many products do you buy that are manufactured in Turkey, and how many companies are you really investing in that you know have its roots or a large part of their business, even their sales in Turkey? Well, it's probably not much. Not much at all, in fact. But at the same time, this has a bigger discussion when we start looking at all the emerging markets and put together what's going on there, and then the potential for, if their currency is going lower compared to the dollar, how much more difficult it makes it for them to buy our products. But on the other hand, you may be saying, hold a second. Their dollar and their currency is down. Well, that means we could buy much more of their products. Yeah, there is some benefit to that. But the reason why the currency is going down is the bigger and overriding issue right here. It's because the liquidity is being drained out of their markets, and it is not simply because their economy may be weak and ours is stronger on a comparable basis. It's because there is a, back to the word vortex. There is a vortex sucking the life out of liquidity when it comes to the emerging markets. So when you look at that and you consider that, I think that that's really important to think about, okay, what do we do from here? Is some of this oversold? Do we want to look into maybe putting some money into Turkey? Do we want to look into Brazil or Australia, Hong Kong, Japan, wherever it may be? You know, that's possible. I still think that if we only cut $20 billion out of the bond purchase program, And it affected their markets so greatly. What happens if and when our economy continues to stabilize and the Fed decides to pull more out of the program? I don't think that the Fed is going to allow for the entire world to crumble as they pull the bond buying program out of the overall stimulus, because that would not be good and that would not be part and parcel of what they're trying to accomplish. But I just want to keep you aware of that and keep some of these symbols on your, actually I'll put them on the show notes, the symbols that you want to keep on a watch list. And keep alert to how much they're changing over time. Because remember, like I said, if the markets are going up and their currency are going down, well, they may offset each other. But if we see both weakening, we realize what's happening is that not only is it being sold, but it's being withdrawn from their system. So keep that in mind. And I'll put all of the symbols of the ones that we keep a watch on, and you can keep a watch on those as well. Now, in reaction to this, we saw that the markets had a pretty wild ride. The S&P broke through its 50-day moving average. We saw that the Dow was, you know, clobbered a bunch of times. There was a bunch of opportunities that looked like there was going to be a nice move to the upside in the markets. As a matter of fact, we saw that there was a rebound, whether it was a dead cat bounce or whether it was something else on Thursday is yet to be seen. But the fact of the matter is that we did see a decent rebound off of the lows. We saw some stocks do incredibly well. I mean, did you see Alexion Pharmaceuticals up 22%, Under Armour up 22% plus? We saw that Facebook beat and their mobile revenues were much better, and their overall growth on mobile and their plan of what they're doing was very well accepted by investors, and their stock was up about 12, 14%. And we continue to see that companies in the U.S. are doing their best to innovate. They're doing their best to keep expenses down, even though it has been rather consistent that earnings on the overall basis have been slowing and being actually a lot of companies coming under. We've given companies a buy for some time. You know, Yahoo, for so many quarters, Yahoo had some numbers that were just okay. But yet at the same time, the new CEO, everybody was all excited. There's big changes happening, going to close down the unprofitable areas, going to do a lot to cut back on the cost of employees, and going to really, you know, change the entire environment. So each time the earnings came out that weren't really just amazing, there still was the opportunity that they were going to have a big transition, and investors bought in. Until this quarter, seems that time has run out. Patience has run out. The same thing happened with Amazon. Amazon was down 10% and consistently stayed there throughout Friday. Usually what we've been seeing is that investors initially are quite concerned with the fact that Amazon has either missed their numbers or they have their outlook that has been much lower than anticipated. Yet the stock moves down and then it moves up, because the idea is that, hey, you know what? They're using a lot of their money to build out their infrastructure, the delivery facilities, and their overall warehouse facilities, and the company is doing really well. What happened that was different this quarter than we've seen in last? That's the big question. And really what I think it was is that the concern came in that Amazon was very much concerned about what their cost of shipping was. Now, you remember they have really good contracts with UPS and FedEx and all that, but they also have something called Amazon Prime. It's about $79 a year, and basically you get free shipping. Now, I use it, and I click away like crazy. I don't pay any shipping charges. And we know also that during the holiday season, they got so many new Amazon Prime subscribers that they couldn't keep up with authorizing and getting them on the books properly. I'm not sure why that was, but I know that that was the news story from Amazon at the time. Maybe it was just to, you know, pump things up. Maybe it was, you know, simply, maybe it was the fact, but I still don't understand with all the technology they have how they couldn't get these things done. It should be automatic and automated. But anyway, the fact was a lot of new subscribers came onto Amazon Prime, thereby increasing the cost overall of the product from what Amazon makes, or shrinking their margin, because they are basically paying, it's not a freebie, somebody's got to pay the shipping, for goodness sakes. they're paying for the actual shipping for the Amazon Prime. So until you get over $79 a year, they're making money. But over the top of that, they're losing money on that. They're talking about now raising the price of the subscription. So I think there's a big concern that, you know, wait a minute. You know, not only are we seeing that sales were a little bit lower than anticipated, which then translates into the fact that, wait a minute, a lot of retailers we thought that were losing business to Amazon, but yet their revenues came in short. Therefore, the other retailers really may not be doing as well. And on top of it, the margin for Amazon was lower. So investors kind of threw in the towel on that too. There's only a certain amount of time with any company that investors will continue to, you know, support it if they're not doing the numbers that were expected. And that's just, you know, simple. And I think we all know that. One of the biggest hit from all the emerging market and all the turmoil were banks. We saw that there was some pretty substantial moves. Don't forget, Citigroup has one of the largest exposures to emerging markets of any particular institution. If you look at what happened with that, you see that there is a pretty good parallel and correlation to the pricing of Citi and what has happened throughout the week. I don't think there's an answer, and maybe we'll get Das back on and talk a little bit about this, because there is really no answer here. The fact is that the mop has to come in and clean up some of this liquidity. And as such, it's going to affect something. You know, the comments of don't fight the Fed are always out there, right? Well, the Fed is still stimulating, not as much, but still stimulating in a big way. $65 billion in interest rates at 0 to 25 basis points is enormous amounts of stimulus. If you think about in past, we only had interest rates that were lowered, and they weren't down to zero. Now we're down to zero, and we have bond purchases, and it's still seemingly not enough to get things done. Before we get to our guest, John Markman, you heard at the top of the show that we have a new sponsor, and TradeStation. You know, we've been using TradeStation for a long time, and we actually do, in fact, write indicators for their app store, the trading app store over at TradeStation.com. And one of the things that's really great about TradeStation is it has a pretty much an open architecture. What I mean by that is that if you're inclined and you want to write some strategies, or if you want to go and you want to actually create your own indicators, or you want to customize a lot of things they have, very easy to do. It takes a little bit of education, but really easy to do. Not only that, TradeStation has really good trading execution, pricing, platform. They have the whole package. Not only that, I'll give you one more thing. Their charting is probably the best in the industry. And I've used a lot of different packages. I got to tell you something. TradeStation has some of the finest charting, and their radar screen and their scanner. Just the package itself will help you be a better investor and trader. That's the bottom line. And that's why I use it. We use it in our firm. We have other things, yes. But as a core of our charting and of our indicators and strategies, we are using their information because their data is clean, because the information that we get is reliable and accurate. And if you're not using TradeStation, I really encourage you to do so, because TradeStation is just the closest you can get, if not there, to what the professionals will use for charting, and it may be even better. Many professionals do use TradeStation, but this is the real core of investing. And if you want to get fast, accurate, reliable data, you want to have good trading and execution, top-notch charts and information from all sources, TradeStation is the place to be. Check it out. Go over to TradeStation.com. If you are not a user of TradeStation already, you also need to check out any of the specials that they have. One of the big things that's happening is that they have the App Store, basically plugins that automatically are downloaded from the App Store right to your system to give you top-line indicators. You know, we have a lot of them on there. There's many other professionals. Larry Williams has them on there. These are the indicators that usually you can't get because they're reserved just for private and proprietary use that you can actually get through the trading app store. I haven't seen anything like this anywhere. Very easy to use. You just click a button, say, let me give a trial of this. And if you like it, some are free, some are pay first. Great stuff. The trading app store over at TradeStation. So definitely give them a chance. Give them a try. And I think you'll like what you see. TradeStation.com. right, we're going to get to our guest, and that is John Markman. Now, listen, John is a busy guy. John is the founder and president of Markman Capital Insight. He's the editor and publisher of seven different newsletters, three of futures, two with options, and the rest are stocks. And he still has time to spend it with us. So, John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How do you find all the time?
Well, most of our systems are automated, so it doesn't take that much time on a daily basis. A lot of the thought has gone into the preparation of all the algorithms that are behind our systems.
Oh, I like that. Into the technology age. And you are rooting for a team, obviously, from your hometown on Super Bowl Sunday, the big day.
Seahawks. I think we have a lot of respect for the Denver Broncos, but I think the Seahawks have what it takes to win this game on Sunday.
You guys, I got to tell you something. Elway's good, though. Elway's going to give you a little bit of a challenge.
If Elway got on the field, that would be quite interesting. I think it'll probably be Peyton Manning.
Probably. Okay, good. Just making sure you were paying attention, okay?
Okay.
Listen, I want to talk to you about some of the things that are going on. Some of the books that you wrote and some of the research you've done. And I know you're a big historian of markets and you follow this. You know, a lot of the commentary recently has been about this January. You know, what happens in January, what goes in January goes for the year. Do you put any credence in that at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a historical bias to January. When January starts off badly, the year tends to end badly as well. I mean, it's not a rock-solid relationship, but January does set a tone for the rest of the year, no doubt.
Yeah, you look at last year, it was the stroke of midnight in 2013 that all of a sudden buyers decide to just go bonkers. And it seems like 180-degree opposite in 2014, where, you know, things were kind of going along swimmingly through 2013 through the end, and all of a sudden, you know, you wake up on 2014, it's like, well, it's a whole different complexion.
Yeah, well, you know, markets are discounting mechanisms, right? So last year anticipated an improvement in the economy this year. And so if we actually get the improvement in the economy this year, well, the prices have already run up to anticipate that. So now the question is, how much will the economy improve, and how much will corporate earnings improve? And if it's not much more than it's already been discounted, well, there's not much for stocks to do.
Right.
You could end up with a year like, 2004, where, the first 9 months of 2004 were pretty terrible. They were just basically flat within a narrow range. And then, investors began to think, 2005, might be a lot better. And stocks ran up, like double digits from November to December. I think you could potentially have a year like that.
One of the things, obviously, that's holding back the potential is that the Fed is at least signaling that they're going to step out of the way. We don't know how long. We don't know at what level. But already they did cut $20 billion from their monthly purchases. We know that Janet Yellen is coming in, and she's kind of dovish as far as we know.
There's two things about that. First of all, Janet Yellen is somebody new. And we think that she's just like her predecessor and her handpicked, the person who handpicked her, Bernanke. The fact is, she's new, and the markets will test her. Every time in the last three instances, when a new Fed chairman has come in, taking over from a much-beloved predecessor, the markets have experienced a lot of volatility. The most salient one was in August of 1987, when Alan Greenspan took over from Paul Volcker. Volcker was known for crushing inflation by raising interest rates, but by the time August of 1987 came along, interest rates were actually fairly tepid. When Greenspan came in, he wanted to, show the market who was boss, so he started raising rates, and a couple months later, you had the crash of October 1987.
Mm-hmm.
When Bernanke came in, taking over from Greenspan in 2006, you had not as much volatility, but certainly a lot of volatility as investors tried to get a beat on this new, the head of this central bank. And now you have Yellen coming in, and I think that as much as investors think that they know her, they don't, and they're going to test her. And so there's going to be a lot of volatility, simply owing to the fact that investors want to understand what she's all about and what she's going to do in terms of leading the world's most important central bank.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to the Fed, everyone will always tell you, don't fight the Fed. But right now, we don't know exactly which Fed to fight. Are we fighting the Fed that seems to be stimulating but is withdrawing liquidity? Or are we not fighting the one that's withdrawing liquidity?
Right.
I think we've seen most recently that, you know, we had an environment from 2008 until December of last year in which the market, in which the Fed was totally focused in on cutting rates and pumping stimulus into the economy. And now we have a sea change because as tapering begins, you're beginning a new regime of withdrawing stimulus. And, you know, by the end of this year, and certainly in the beginning of 2015, you'll be down to, you may not be tightening rates at the Fed, but you're certainly withdrawing a lot of stimulation. And I think that's what the markets are reacting to right now.
You know, what's interesting is that in the old days, when the Fed would come in and do all sorts of work in terms of giving, a stimulus, what they would do is that they would reduce down interest rates. You know, they sometimes do a few things behind the scenes as well, but none as pronounced in recent day, clearly, or as far as I recall, of, you know, buying all these bonds and doing all this kind of money printing, if you will, at the level they're doing it. And at that time, you look historically, I don't think there was ever a time that rates were less than 1%. I don't remember that. And still, even if we stop doing all the bond purchases, we're still at a 0 to 0.25% rate, which is extremely low.
It is extremely low, but it's always the delta, and it's always the direction. So investors are looking forward. And it's not just U.S. investors. If it was just the United States, it wouldn't be such a problem. But as Yellen and the Fed begin to withdraw support, you're going to see interest. You're going to see bonds go down, yields go up, and as yields go up, the dollar goes down. I'm sorry, the dollar will go up. As the dollar goes up and our yields go up, other countries who are either pegged to the dollar or are dependent on liquidity from the United States are going to have to see their currencies go down, and as their currencies go down, they've got to raise interest rates. Well, what happens when those foreign countries, whether it's Argentina or South Africa or Malaysia, when they raise their interest rates, it's suddenly harder for them to pay their sovereign debt.
Mm-hmm.
Their local companies have to pay more to borrow, and U.S. companies, when they go in and try to sell into those countries, because the dollar is so high, it's much more expensive to sell their goods. So what's happening, another adjustment that's happening right now is investors are, you know, looking at the earnings of a Procter & Gamble or a Coca-Cola or an companies that sell overseas, Starbucks even, and saying, well, you know, is the amount that I've factored in here for the currency accurate? And if it's not, I've got to adjust. And right now, it's going to be those earnings estimates are going to have to be adjusted down to account for the change in the currencies.
Yeah, and when you look at it's interesting.
I know it sounds very obscure.
No, it's not. It's not
the
at
way
all.
It works.
It's funny because, you know, you have to admit that much of the money that went into the markets through stimulus and all that obviously not only went into the U.S. markets and it helped banks and helped, but it obviously seeped out into other areas because of the knock-on effects. You look at, we talk about this at the top of the show, but you look at Turkey, who had an emergency meeting this week and raised their interest rates from 7 to 12%. Their stock market, and when you add the stock market and their currency, 3 months is down 29%. And you go down the list, Brazil down 21%, and Philippines down 12%, and Russia down 13%. These are, you know, we didn't see that. We're down, you know, 3, 4% over here, and okay, these are substantial moves in these markets.
You kind of didn't want, like a month ago or 2 months ago, you didn't want to say the word contagion because it didn't seem to be possible.
Right.
But now you really are seeing a contagion, and it's this knock-on effect that we were talking about, where, you know, if Brazil's currency goes down, it doesn't seem like there should be any effect on the United States. But look at a company like Coca-Cola, or look at a company like Procter & Gamble. They're expecting to get 2, 3, 4% growth out of their products in the United States, maybe by introducing some new products, or by just getting natural growth from the, you know, from GDP advancement. Their growth is coming from the middle class customers in Jakarta, Nairobi, Taipei. They depend on Rio de Janeiro. They depend on those emerging market countries for the 10-12% growth that that investors are expecting. And if they don't get that because their prices are too high, or because of the currency translations, investors have to cut earnings estimates for those companies, and that's what you're seeing right now is the volatility in U.S. stocks.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because there is a clear fight between the two sides that you mentioned earlier, whether or not the withdrawal of stimulus is you know, a problem, and that's going to be the projection, or if it's okay, we still have a lot of stimulus, and so we'll keep on investing. You could see that, you know, when the drops happen, they try to pick it up a bit, and then you see a lot of it fall, and you know, even with good earnings, that some companies are being, you know, hit pretty hard, but at the same time, aside from, I think, adjusting earnings estimates and outlook, what's interesting is it looks like that investors have run out a little bit of patience for misses. Have you noticed that?
Yes. And then one of the reasons for it is they don't know exactly why those misses are happening.
Right.
You know, and you know, the currency adjustments are kind of in the green eyeshade department of companies, and they're not really readily announced. You know, a company doesn't announce, hey, we're adjusting our, you know, currency expectations. You only find out about it once the earnings reports comes out.
Right.
So it's a bit of a surprise, and investors don't like to be surprised.
No, definitely not, or uncertain. We know that for a fact.
Well, we don't mind a little uncertainty, because that's just and that's part of being an investor. You know, it's a discontinuous surprise that we worry about.
A discontinuous surprise.
Yeah,
I like that.
A company says, you know, if a company says, well, we were using, I mean, they're not going to announce this, I mean, but they'll say something like, you know, we were using X, you know, for currency translation, and now we're going to use Y. And, you know, investors going like, what, really?
Right. What does that mean? Yeah. How's it going to work? It changed? Yeah, I mean, nobody likes that.
So it's not as nearly as much fun to talk about as, you know, how many iPhones is Apple selling, or, you know, how many, you know, how much Tide is Procter & Gamble able to persuade people in Nairobi to buy. It's not as much fun, but it's super important, and that's why people are sort of feeling uncomfortable right now, because they don't understand why. Because, you know, the actual growth of the sales is not that bad. It's the way that the sales are recorded that's
right.
really impacting the stocks.
I got to tell you something. I thought I was the only one, by the way, and I feel a lot better, because I also get a lot of joy and a tremendous amount of personal uplift when I think about the amount of Tide that sold to the people in Nairobi. I thought it was just me.
Well, you know, you, people in Nairobi, Jakarta, you know, South Africa, wherever they, Namibia, wherever they might be, they all have local solutions for cleaning things, or for their chocolate, or for their soda. And, you know, these companies like Coca-Cola, General Mills, whatever, Procter & Gamble, they have, you know, it's an incredible amount of money persuading people to stop using their local products and to use their products instead.
Right.
And the differential can be slightly higher, can be slightly more expensive to buy Tide than the local product. But if it's too expensive, then they won't do it. And that's what's really happening right now. When the currencies get out of whack,
right.
It becomes too expensive.
Right.
So what happens is that the companies can either raise the price of their Tide, or, and this is even worse, they eat the differential. And that gnaws away at their profit margins.
Yeah, the margins either way are going to get cut. The question is how much. And, you know, companies these days are very cognizant that there, you know, are a lot of investors watching the margins. And, you know, that's a big issue, because we did see that margins in general have reached, you know, incredibly high levels compared to where they were historically. And that was always a good thing, because the cut of human capital, the reengineering of the company, the fact that there is a tremendous amount of automation taking place, and, you know, things that they had to pay for before, they don't, and et cetera. I mean, one of the big things with Amazon's earnings was that they announced that they're really having a significant increase in their shipping costs. Well, no kidding. You give it away, free shipping, you know, through your Amazon Prime. So, I mean, these things go into the whole mix. But I wanted to ask you, in terms of what you've seen so far in this earnings season, putting aside the, you know, the currency issues and all that, do you agree? I mean, we've seen, again, some softness in revenue, but yet companies are able to get close to or beat a little bit by the earnings. We've seen companies that have gone just bonkers when they beat by a little, you know, 20% here and there, and then other companies are just getting absolutely drowned when they miss. So when you sum it all up...
I think what investors are going to be looking at is companies that can really assure the investors that they know where their next dollar is coming from. So one of the groups that's doing really well, and that I've been recommending strongly to my subscribers, are the defense industry stocks, you know, the Pentagon stocks. And, you know, a lot of people expected the Pentagon contractors to get hammered last March when sequestration started.
Yeah.
And instead, it's been the opposite. They've been amongst the best stocks on the board. And whether you're talking about Boeing, now Boeing had a little bit of an issue a couple of days ago when they reported. But Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, Alliant Tech Systems, you know, Huntington Ingalls, the big nuclear warship maker in Virginia, all these companies are reporting great earnings and beating expectations on the revenue and the earnings side. And I think those are the kind of companies that investors are going to be looking for.
But John, let me ask something. Why is it that if we did have, we did have sequestration, we did have a cut in the defense costs, why is it and how is it that those stocks never really blinked more than when the thought of it happened?
There's one thing that the Democrats and the Republicans can agree on is that funding for the Pentagon should not be cut.
Yeah, never cut the defense costs. And the same thing, if you look at Boeing, by the way, Boeing had a string of problems with their 787s and all that, and the stock moved down, you know, at the worst 2% or 3% during that period, and then just kept on going and going because the orders kept coming in, and, you know, really competition for what they were providing wasn't there. Well, let's talk a little bit about...
Boeing is a product cycle stock. It always has been and always will be. So as long as they're in an upward upward trend for their for a new product cycle, they're going to do well. And right now, it's not just the 787, which is, you know, the Dreamliner, which has, you know, gotten the most attention, but the new 777 and the new stretch versions of their current planes are a lot more fuel efficient, and they're doing really, really, really well. You know, in the United States, we're really spoiled by our air traffic system. We have, you know, lots of planes and going to lots of places. But in emerging markets, particularly India,
like Nairobi.
Nairobi, et cetera,
yeah.
There's just not enough planes.
Right.
And so it's a great time in the cycle for Boeing. And I'm recommending picking it up here on this pullback.
So in terms of the – let's kind of switch gears to commodities for a second. There has been the note out from Goldman for forever now, it seems, that gold is going down to, you know, some ridiculous level, and that, you know, we saw natural gas go berserk with this whole polar vortex. I just like saying the polar vortex, the whole polar vortex thing. And, you know, there is a concern. We have seen that corn has come down dramatically. We've seen all the most of the grains and all that did pull back very substantially last year, compared to where they were, at least. And, you know, the big question, I think, is, you know, what's the deal with precious metals? You have a little bit of a take on that?
Yeah, I mean, corn and wheat are certainly in a definite to pull back. And I think with the weather... with the weather as bad as it is, that's going to be a pretty tough planting season.
You mean the polar vortex?
Yeah, the polar vortex. Oh, yes, the polar vortex. Ruining all the corn.
Yes.
It's ruining all
the
wheat.
That damn vortex.
Watch out for the soybean. You know, it's funny, you know. If you want to, it's not funny, but it's really interesting that the reduction in the ability to plant, I mean, to grow these corn and provide it for the livestock industry has sent live cattle prices, you know, to the highest levels in years.
Yeah, well, it's a standard supply demand thing, and you know, you're going to get that. They're the end product for that, right?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty confident in a couple things that in a commodity side. I feel like coffee is going to continue to come down now, which, you know, I think it's shortable right now, and cocoa is a fascinating product. And it's, you know, mostly consumed in the developed countries, but it's entirely grown in developing countries, particularly in Africa. And right now there's a huge demand for cocoa in China as a luxury product. And cocoa has been in a pretty bearish trend for many years. It's just bumping up against its top, and I think that if it busts through, you're going to see an absolute explosion in cocoa prices.
Hmm. Very interesting. And what about gold and silver?
You know, I think that you know, gold will be used as a refuge of safety if the markets continue to be unstable. But generally speaking, I think it's you're not going to see it go back to its high for at least another probably 4 or 5 years.
Really interesting. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things that are out there that are probably preventing that these days. And you know, in terms of Pricing for power, the other alternatives. I mean, this whole Bitcoin thing is also being used as a proxy for some of that and hiding money. And
well, you know, gold was a proxy for inflation. You know, the reason that all the hedge funds got all hyped up on buying it a couple of years ago was that there was expected to be a tremendous surge of inflation due to the Fed's actions in pumping up the U.S. economy. Well, that never happened, and inflation is absolutely quiescent. Now, the only thing that gold could possibly have going for it, and this is a possibility, so put this, just put this in your head and think about it for a little while. Low inflation has been the greatest supporter of the U.S. stock market. When inflation is low, price earnings ratios can go up. But, you know, when you hear the president talking about raising the minimum wage for federal contractors, when you hear about cities like my hometown of Seattle trying to raise the minimum wage to $15 for all workers, what you're hearing is wage inflation. And for anybody who lived through the 70s, wage inflation is what causes real inflation and everything else.
Right, because it increases spending, and obviously increasing spending is the whole point of supply demand, back to the inflation discussion.
If the minimum wage comes up to 15, which is pretty high, I mean, I don't know what it is nationally. I think it's around 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes up to 15, it's not just the minimum wage workers' wages that go up. The whole pay scale has to go up.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, so like if and a McDonald's manager who's making, let's say, $21 an hour now, well, if his minimum wage workers are getting 15, you've got to raise his amount, and of course you've got to raise his manager's amount, et cetera. And suddenly you're looking around and you're like, oh my God, we've got inflation again.
Well, the other problem is that's the best possible scenario.
Right. That's the best possible scenario for gold.
You have McDonald's that now is paying the extra money, so the dollar menu now becomes the $2 menu because they need the money to come in so they can pay for, the extra cost for the whole process. I think
you can tell your grandkids when McDonald's $5 menu used to be a dollar.
Right. Exactly. I remember the day. Listen, I remember the day when the chicken McNuggets came out, and I remember going down all the time to this particular McDonald's, and we'd go after school and, right after Space Invaders, by the way, and eat chicken McNuggets. But
I hate to say this, but I remember getting 19-cent hamburgers at McDonald's when
really?
It came out.
I only remember them from White Castle at those levels.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Although I remember quarter pizza, a slice of pizza for a quarter. Remember that? No longer. All right, listen, we're going to kind of wrap it up. We had a lot of discussion about all sorts of things here, about earnings season, January effect, emerging markets, don't fight the Fed, but maybe fight the Fed, and the potential for inflation. The funny thing about inflation, John, you and I know, is that, we have no inflation, but everything costs more.
I don't know about that. I don't think everything costs more.
Well, it seems to be in my life that everything costs more. And
yeah.
a lot of people complain about that.
Andrew, the best things in life are free.
Right, like friendship.
Exactly.
And you know what? You know who really believes that? The entire population of Nairobi. That's their national anthem.
As long as Netflix doesn't raise prices, and make us pay more to watch Breaking Bad and,
then we're good.
Then
we're in good shape.
We're good to go.
I hear you. John Markman, you can check him out and find out all the information. I think, John, you do have some free trials, don't you?
Yeah, if people go to markmancapital.net, they can take a free trial of my flagship service, which is called Strategic Advantage.
And that, by the way, I read that. That's great. That's great stuff that you put out. I mean, on the money in terms of what's going on, bit of insight, bit of recommendation, suggestion, and kind of looking at places that a lot of people don't always look. So I really encourage people to get a subscription, at least a trial, check it out, and I think you'll be pretty much hooked. So hey, I thank you so much, and I know that this is going to go out right before the Super Bowl, so I'm assuming that your team is a winner. So congratulations.
I hope so. Go Hawks.
See you later,
great
buddy.
Great to talk to you.
All right,
care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff from John Markman. Thanks so much for having some time to spend with us. Like I said, he's a pretty busy guy. Now, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that we've touched on, we've talked about, but also things that you need to know about. I mentioned last week, and we had a great response to this, that the Aero strategy, which is a brand new strategy we launched just last week, which really is all about finding the highs and the lows, extreme and exhaustion points on the S&P 500 and investing long when it is getting to a point when it's very, very oversold, exhausted, and that trend is starting to move to a point where it looks like there is an opportunity to get into a position on the long side. And of course, when things are getting so overdone on the upside that we go short or sell out of that. Stays with the trend for a while. I told you last week there's about a 2,400% return as compared to about a 450% return for the S&P 500 over the same period of time. It was about 19 years. When we looked at this and did the back test, I really encourage you that if you're looking for a strategy that can go long or short and really focuses on one thing, a broad-based market indicator, you check out what Arrow is all about. On the Disciplined Investor website, there is a link to Arrow. Just click it and just put a few pieces of information in, and we'll send you an entire detail of what happened over the years, what it's all about. It's about a 10-page document that gives you all the things you need to know about and what years it was up, what years it was down, what the returns were on an annual basis, etc. That's the Arrow strategy, which I think you'll really like, and we manage that for clients. It's a $50,000 minimum for that for an investment, but, you know, again, as a diversification tool for your portfolio, there's lots of things that you need to do, and one of the things is to have some different kinds of investments, not only in asset allocation diversification, but also styles of investing. And that's what we look to accomplish for our clients. Now, the other thing I'll mention is all about this contagion issue, which we've talked about, but I want to share with you just one more point. And that is that, you know, we did see last week that there was a continuation of a taper down to the $10 billion, as I mentioned. Now, where does that really play out? As we saw over the weekend, that China's industrial production again is at a six-month low. On the confirmation of that, where we saw in the beginning of the week that the HSBC Flash Index came out, and that was in a contraction. Now, this stayed above the 50 point level, reading, just over at 50.5, and that came out Friday evening. But if you look at the fact that there is a lot of money that washed through the system and ended up in all sorts of places, little nooks and crannies, whether it was, you know, Turkey or any place in Latin America, whether it's, you know, you look at Russia and in Asia, particularly the emerging markets in Asia, these are probably going to continue to see some significant problems because they really rely on the U.S. They rely on their relationship to the dollar. And I want you to look at the potential for lightening up on the emerging markets exposure for a little while until we see this flush out a little bit, probably until the next monthly meeting. If this continues to do what it's been doing, which is plunging, and we see that there is the continuation of this kind of sell-off going on, and it does spread, which is very probable, then you can look at this as possibly starting to be a time next month before the next meeting of the Fed to maybe nibble into the emerging markets. If we do continue to see this kind of a slide, I wouldn't really jump in right now because while we may see a turn, the fact still remains that the Fed just tapered again. And unless we see some really, really poor numbers in the U.S., where we'll see, for example, next week, the unemployment rate, we'll see that GDP continues to stay where it is or move down. We'll see that in a couple of weeks again. We just saw it last week with over a 3% GDP growth. But, you know, you really need to see a lot of a slowdown here. So I'd watch the unemployment numbers next week for a big clue. If we see that the unemployment numbers next week continued on the really poor showing that we saw last month, where less than 100,000 people were put on, even though the unemployment rate did in fact move down to 6.7, I would look at this as a time that, okay, emerging markets have been killed. Unless we see this and look at the data continually on the economy, that we're seeing a low level of inflation and no uptick there, and the jobs numbers really start to move lower again, then it may be time, and only then may be time, to look at some of these emerging markets. Now, where do you go? Well, there's a good list of ETFs that you can buy into, whether it's going to be, for example, the you want to look at India through EPI, symbol EPI. You want to look at Spain, EWP. You want to look at Turkey, TUR. You want to look at, for example, Russia, RSX. Philippines, EPHE. You want to look at, for example, even Brazil, EWZ. These are some of the places that have been hit the hardest. And not all of these trade with a lot of volume, so be very careful on liquidity of these. But remember, when you're dealing with an ETF, and I've mentioned this a bunch of times now, when you're dealing with these ETFs, you're really dealing with two things: the equity exposure, so you're going to get the market return inside of there, as well as the currency, because when you buy this, it's in dollars, and they're going to have a conversion of whatever the particular currency that underlies that market is. So you're going to get both sides of the equation. And the good news is, if they can bring their currencies up, which is usually a little opposite of what you think about now, what we've had in the past is the race to the bottom on currencies. But if they can bring their currencies up, that will actually affect their markets very positively, and you'll get a double benefit. You get the currency benefit and you get the market benefit, just the opposite of what we saw in the last 2-3 months. So we are going to have some more great guests on, and I thank you for joining me. Of course, questions can be addressed to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Lots of earnings coming out next week, as well as some amazing levels of economic indicators that we're going to start seeing again. We kind of laid off last week or the week before with not that much, and it's going to start all over again with the big daddy of them all, the unemployment numbers, next Friday before the market opens. So we will see how that goes. Talk about that next week as well. But please send me any questions that you have, any suggestions for guests that you may have as well. I hope you have a great Super Bowl Sunday. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.